Welcome back to the Coffee and Heroes podcast. This is episode 239 and the final part of our interview with writer Jim Zub. This time round, we talk Jim's game-changing work on Conan the Barbarian.
Well, it would be remiss of us, of course, not to finish off the conversation with Conan, of course.
I've heard of him.
First of all, I have to say, from a retailer point of view, with Conan, it was doing well enough for us with Marvel, but with the Titan relaunch, right, we saw our pull list triple for it.
That's amazing.
Once again, proving that number one theory of yours. But also, it achieved the impossible. It got this man to buy two copies. This man is a sucker for a map.
Cartography, man.
Oh,
it's like classic fantasy fare. I love it.
Yeah.
I love, getting that new Hyborian Age map as one of those covers. I hate to tell you, one of our upcoming issues also has a map cover that you're going to want real bad.
God damn you, Jim.
I can't tell you of what, but once you see it, you're going to love it. Conan he's the Superman of sword and sorcery, man. There's a real pedigree there. You know, I think he started being published 6 years before Superman. He is a genre-defining character. If you go to people on the street and you say, tell me a fantasy character,
yeah,
he's one of the only ones that most people would bring up in casual company, like people who are not genre fans, right? And if you say the word barbarian, he is the template. He is the – everyone making a barbarian character is either making a Conan-style character or purposefully avoiding it because it's the template. In the same way that the Superman character becomes – you are either painting within or you're painting around the template. Yeah. Either of those things is a choice based on the fact that the character is the icon. And so it is a – it's an incredible honor, you know, to be writing Conan and then to have the chance to write the character multiple times in these circumstances is the most unlikely, ludicrous roll of the dice I could possibly imagine. Getting to write the character, the monthly adventures at Marvel, was already impossible. And it didn't like fail like nose in the dirt awful, but it was right in the midst of the pandemic and we just kind of got the energy kicked out from under us. You know what I mean? Every book was sort of a mess. And I had two issues come out and then this 7 month gap in the middle of a 4-part story. And kind of there were more important things in the world at that moment than what's happening with Jim's issue 15 of Conan. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't a new number one and it wasn't a bold new direction. You know, like it just kind of got swallowed up by everything that was going on at that time. And so we were kind of on our back feet right from the start. And not because anyone wasn't trying, but just because of the nature of the world of things. Well, and to finish that run up, we did issue 25, which was Legacy 300. And I've always wanted to do one of those big fat anniversary issues. So that felt like a bit of a, all right, well, at least we ended on a cool note, and that was a fun milestone in my career. And
I mean, don't do yourself dirty, Jim. I mean, it was a
fun book.
Great run. I mean, it was.
I'm not trying to steal my own thunder. Yeah. Or whatever. But it was just such a weird. I had such a wistful feeling. If you get a chance, reread 300, and my story has a very wistful, almost like we did the best we could kind of ending, like literally Conan and Belit are standing there and she's like, he fights these sort of ghosts of his past and future, which is a very anniversary kind of story. And at the very end, she's like, you may have just destroyed yourself. You don't know. You killed that king.
Yes.
What if that's you someday and you're going to die? And he says, there's nothing we can do about the future. All we can do is live the life we're having right now. The stories go on until the end, and that's the way life is. Uh-huh. And that was very much this fatalistic air of we're in the midst of a pandemic. And hey, one of my favorite things, my bucket list that I didn't even know would be a bucket list book. I kind of didn't get the kind of momentum I wanted, and I didn't get to do the long-term kind of run, you know, to really sink my teeth into it. And I had to kind of push it away and go, well, that was that. I did the best I could. I got to write a really important character and I felt good about the stories, but you couldn't help but sort of be like, what if I had gone bigger? What if I had done things differently? Mm. What have I learned about? And the fandom is so passionate. And I was passionate, and I am passionate, obviously, but I didn't appreciate the depth and breadth of that fandom that this character's been published so long. It's generational. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like 60, 70 year old fans of Conan and 30, 40 and 20, 30. Like, it is literally generational. And I never, because it was all pandemic, I also didn't get to meet those fans. I didn't get to sign their books. I didn't get to hype that thing up at panels and do all that stuff and convince people, you got to buy this book right now. And I don't know that that would have saved it per se, but I didn't have that experience of doing an icon and then getting the flow, the back and forth kind of conversation. And,
Makes me wish that, you know, at the time, myself and Roddy, who's another friend of ours who were voracious about the thing, had contacted you to tell you how good it was. And in fact,
I did hear from people, you know, but it was sort of like everyone was so distracted. Like, obviously, it's easy now to look back and go, well, you know, okay, we're on the other side of a pandemic. But at the time, it was like, I don't know if comics are going to continue. Mm. Like, I don't. Marvel was telling people pencils down, and there was a 7-month gap in production, right? Like, it was very easy for me to think, well, my fourth issue is never going to come out, you know, or they'll release it as just a trade and get it out there and cover their losses. And then the North American comic industry is just going to, you know, evaporate. Now that seems hyperbolic, but it didn't for a few months there.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I did it. I was super happy I did it. And I walked away and I was like, well, that was cool. You know, what's the next challenge? What's kind of in the future? And the rights holders for Conan had been very kind, and they were they liked the book a lot. They liked the writing a lot. They liked my vision for longer term kind of storytelling around the character. They felt like I had the voice for Conan and his world. And so Fred Malmberg, he's the head of Heroic Signatures. He had reached out and he said, stay in touch, you know? And I was like, well, of course. And in my head, I imagined it would be like the All-Star game. Like, anytime there was an anniversary, you skate out on the ice and you wave your hand and you go, I also did a Conan. And you come back and you do a short story, or maybe you do a one shot or an annual or a mini series or something. You know what I mean? And that's a very cool thing. You know, if there's a Thunderbolts anniversary, I hope Marvel calls and I get to do a little 5-pager and go, hey, I also Thunderbolted it, you know, or whatever. Like, that is what you expect once you've done a run on a thing, right? I'm not Kurt Busiek. I didn't come up with Thunderbolts. You know, I'm not Robert E. Howard, and I'm not Roy Thomas, but, you know, I did some stuff on a Conan. But then they were very serious. They said, you know, we're looking for pitches for really ambitious publishing plan for the future of Conan. We're going to publish it ourselves. As much as Titan is the publisher of the Conan comic, I work directly for Heroic Signatures.
Okay.
So Titan is publishing the English version of the comic. But I barely speak to Titan. I just work for Heroic. So there's no, my editor works in the same office as the rights holders, who are next door in their cubicles, in their office, glass, whatever. And so there's no, it's frictionless. We all talk about Conan, and if everyone likes the idea, it just happens. And that's no offense to Marvel, but whenever it's a licensing situation, you've got two layers of approvals and editorial and communication and all that kind of stuff. So I was pitching directly to the rights holders, and I told my wife, I said, you know, they want me to pitch Conan stuff. And she goes, well, are you going to? I said, yeah, of course I'm going to try. And she said, can they even hire you? Like, are they interested in hiring you? You just did it. And I was like, yeah, that's stupid. I'm clearly filler. Like, I'm one of many pitches that they're going to take. And I'm like on the field of, there's a concept in creative works in comics and in other things where it's called a bake-off, right? Like, multiple creative teams are pitching for a concept.
Okay.
They try not to do it at Marvel and DC. They used to do it all the time, where it would be like, we're getting 6 pitches for the Avengers and we're going to pick the best one. So you're going to have 5 very angry writers who wish that they were writing your book, and they will try and poison your tea next time they see you at a convention or whatever. No, but it's like, I assumed it was a bake-off and there would be a ton of writers who was pitching. And there was multiple writers who pitched on Conan, but inadvertently I could go in fearless, because I was never going to get it. How could I possibly get the book again after I had just done the book? It's impossible. They'd never give it to me. So I just pitched the craziest shit I could. I pitched the biggest, broadest idea I could, because it was never going to be mine. So why not just blow the doors off and throw all the big ideas out and get it out of my system, get it out of my head. And then if they said no, because they were going to say no, I could just walk away and go, well, I gave it the best job I could. I pitched the hell out of it. And maybe I can file the serial numbers off some of that and do a creator-owned book or something. Uh-huh. And then they came back and they said, we love it. We want you to front the monthly title. And it was like, I almost wanted to talk them out of it. Like, I was like, are you nuts? Like, this is an advertising nightmare. The guy who just sunsetted Conan at Marvel, he's doing it again. Why should you give a shit? Like, that is not a good sales pitch. Like, that is not a good sales pitch. I was just like, oh, what are we doing? Wow. Okay. Because they were essentially like, look, Conan is an international property. It's going to be published in multiple languages. The people in Italy and Portugal and France, they don't care about variant covers and relaunches. They just want a damn good Conan book month after month. So what we need is a long-term creative partner who knows and understands the property and is thinking long-term and big picture.
Yeah.
And we feel that you fit those things more than a splashy, unexpected, you know, choice.
Yeah.
And then they said, I was like, I mean, I'm not here to talk you out of it. Clearly, I want to do the book. And then they said, who do you want to draw it? And I was like, well, there's this guy, Rob De La Torre. I had seen his artwork online and we had chatted a little bit. I had ordered a commission from him. And I'd seen the pages he did in King Size Conan at Marvel. And I was like, this guy's phenomenal. I don't know how he is on deadlines, but if we could get that dude, that I think that would really make old school fans sit up and take notice.
Thanks, Dave.
And then we just started pulling this creative team together. And it's been alchemical. It's been one of the most enjoyable, exciting, ridiculously successful and vibrant projects I've ever been a part of. Like today, issue 7 comes out and my social media is under siege. Like I'm just getting bombarded. I get messages from retailers like I've never gotten before. I get more reviews on issue six than I get on most issue 1s of most other books that I do.
Yeah.
I get heartfelt messages from older fans. I get excited messages from brand new fans. Like it feels so different. It feels so different than any other book I've worked on. I get more, for lack of a better term, fan mail about Conan than I ever got on Avengers. Like it's nuts. And in a way that it feels very special and it feels very, I don't know how else to describe it. It's very cool. And I'm trying to sort of like enjoy this ride because it is so wild right now and feels like a runaway hit in all the best ways possible.
I think the core of it is how authentic it feels to the source material. And
yeah,
I think the biggest compliment that I can give the series is that it feels both like the original Howard source material and it evokes the earliest issue of Conan, the Roy Thomas, the Barry Windsor Smith books back in the day, in style and in storytelling. And I can only assume that that is deliberate, you know?
It's very much like, so because I got this second chance on an impossible dream of doing the book, the minute I got it again, it was like it was so much more precious to me because it was impossible. Why me now? Obviously I was proud of the pitch and I had a good idea, but it was like this diamond had slipped out of my fingers and somehow I reached between and I caught it again before it completely fell. I don't know how I did it, but it was so much more precious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just clutched it so hard, like my fingers bled. And so I dove into rereading the Howard stories and I literally got a printed copy and just started like highlighting sections that spoke to me, the poetic language and the vocabulary. I reread the shit out of the Savage Sword issues in the original monthly book. And again, literally clipped out panels like this is important. This is special. This is the right stuff. This is the voice and the feel and the momentum and the air that feels like the Hyborian age. And it's not that I didn't do that at Marvel, but at Marvel, it was like yeah, I'm writing a fantasy book, and Conan speaks a little differently than other characters, and there's a bit more captioning to get a bit of a poetic punch to it. And every so often I could get a bit indulgent with some of the descriptions. Mm. But yeah. Then on the Titan one, I was like, oh no, we're doing it all. Like, we're going to go full Howard. We're going to make this thing feel like he just ripped it right out of Weird Tales. Like, we're going to go dark, because we knew we could do a mature reader's book. So I'm like, we're going to go as pulpy and violent and sexy, crazy. We're going to dig into this real earthy, intense, emotional air. And we're going to just torture the shit out of this character the way, like, this guy, when he survives something, it's because he earned it. Like, we're just going to mess him up. Yeah. We're going to make this thing intense. And then Rob's artwork just spoke to this classic era of a character, but with all the fidelity and the maturity of a modern publishing initiative. And it just came together, man. Like, the other thing that makes it feel very different is I've always written full script. And Rob, when he had done full script books, he had felt very kind of restrained by them. He didn't want to be told how many panels to put on a page or where to emphasize things. And so he said, you know, that was one of his misgivings about doing the monthly book. And I said, well, what if we do it old school like Roy Thomas did? I'll just give you an outline and then you blast me back pages and then I'll come up with the lettering. And he's like, do people do that? And I said, yeah, not very often. He's like, can you do that? I'm like, we're about to find out. And so the Free Comic Book Day issue, Conan Zero, was the first, that was our proof of concept. That was us figuring it out. And I got those pages. And instead of, when you write full script, even if you're writing to an artist that you've worked with a bunch, it's easier because you know what they do well. But you're still imagining what it could look like. And then you're hoping that your text kind of inspires them to do that thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
On Marvel style, on like Stan Lee, kind of Roy Thomas style writing, you're giving them the broad inspiration and you're telling them, you're like a cheerleader. Like, it's going to feel like this. And I want this hopeful and I want this exciting and I want this, but you tell me the pacing, you tell me how many panels and where the emphasis falls. And then you get that artwork back, and a guy like De La Torre, he leaves you big open swaths because that's where the text is going to go. Mm-hmm. And now I look at it and I go, that panel, that expression, that movement, I have to live up to it. That guy is one of the best artists I've ever seen. And he drew what I told him to draw. Don't drop the ball on the words now, buddy. It comes out of you. The pulp comes out of you. The poetry comes out of you. The Robert E. Howard comes out. You don't feel stupid writing those words because look at that fucking art. Like, look how beautiful it is. I don't want to mar that artwork with garbage. Not that I'm ever trying to put garbage words down, but like,
it brings you up.
It brings you up. You have to push yourself. And when I find that, you know, poetic voice and when I hit the mark on it, and Richard Starkings, one of the best letterers in the business, is lettering the book. And he tells me it feels like Howard. And I'm like, does it? Yeah. When I reread the page and I go, if I was reading the book, I would enjoy this. That's the best feeling you can imagine. And I can almost step back and go, this is a good book, despite whether or not my name was on it. Not, you know, obviously I'm proud of almost every book that I've ever done, but this book feels like holding on to lightning and it's just roaring forth and exploding in people's faces. And I finished lettering out an issue and I'm just like, damn, what are we doing? This is some stuff, you know, like that's a pretty cool feeling. And it's not an ego thing. It's not like that's just mine. Those are my words. It was just like us, like team Conan, we're doing this crazy wild thing, you know, and the editor, we get on a call and this sounds really crass. I don't know how else to do this. Sometimes Rob sends pages in or Doug Braithwaite sends pages in and the phone rings and I pick up the phone and there's no hello. It's just fuck. Check that out. I was like, I know. And we're just like screaming at each other how excited we are to see the work. Like, it makes me feel like a kid. I feel like I'm discovering this stuff all over. And that energy comes through in the work and it comes through in the promotion. And it comes through when the fan base is excited. And I go to New York Comic Con and I've got guys old enough to be my dad coming over to the table with sparkles in their eyes like they're teenage girls. And they're like, you did it. This is the real Conan. This is the real shit. And I was like, thank you. No, you don't understand. It feels like I'm picking up a new issue of Savage Sword, but it's like crazier and bloodier and more boobs. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you very much. No, man, I got all my friends hooked on it. And this is the greatest honor. And I'm just like, whoa, like it feels, the intensity is there, you know, in a way that all of us kind of know and respect what we're in the midst of. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm, how do I say this without trying to sound egotistical? I don't think that we are like the greatest creative team of Conan of all time, but I feel like we're making a cool mark at this moment.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like in the middle, when Zdarsky and Chichetto are like coming to the climax, does Zdarsky think to himself, this one will be remembered? Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I hope this run will be remembered, and every month we're trying to earn that cover price and really knock it out of the park. And it doesn't, there's no weak issue. There's no, man, we just got to get over the hump. Like, it's like every single one's got to hit, like just thump, like as hard as possible. And if not, why not? Like, what are we not putting into that issue, you know? And so it feels so cool. It feels so cool to be in the midst of it. And not only to know that what we're putting out right now is something we're all very proud of, but to be on conversations and be talking about deep in year two and beyond, that we're like, yeah, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do that. And even when I've been at Marvel, and this is no offense to anyone at Marvel, but in current North American comic publishing, everything comes with a question mark. You go, it would be great if we could do this in the future. And editorial's got to hold their cards to the chest and go, we'll see. And that's understandable because you don't know how sales are going to go and you don't know how things are going to work. But man, does it make it hard to plan for the future? Yeah. You know what I mean? Does it make it hard to get mythic and to get big picture and to foreshadow stuff and set up subplots and all that kind of thing? And here, I was holding some cards to my chest in the sense I kind of thought, well, we're going to do 12 of the craziest issues I can muster and hope that we get them all out. And if I do these 12, that'll be like, well, that's the best Conan I could do. And the minute we launched crazy, like just crazy, Titan, like I think triple the best seller Titan has ever had. And, you know, on par with any of the Marvel numbers. And we were just like, oh my God, like we're really doing it. Then it became, all right, Jim, how much do you want to do? How far do you want to plan out? And it was like, oh, the field's open. Well, then we got to do this. And this, and we start planting our stakes in the ground. And that is the coolest feeling, is knowing not only is it cool right now, but I know where we're going to be in a year, and it's cool too. And I know where we're going to be in, you know, year three, and that's crazy cool. And like set it all in motion, you know?
Some would say
one of the most exciting parts of working on the book right now.
Some would say this is best in life.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Okay. It's funny you mentioned that. That line of dialogue, of course, is from the Conan movie by John Milius, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. There was a moment when I started writing Conan stuff more regularly, because I wrote Conan Red Sonja with Gail Simone at Dark Horse in 2015. I wrote, you know, some Savage Sword stuff at Marvel before I got the monthly book. The minute you work on Conan, like any iconic character, people will throw lines at you. Everyone will do their Arnold impression for you. Everyone will ask you the Riddle of Steel. Everyone will ask you what's best in life. And at first you have this weird love hate with it because it's so intrinsic to the character. And you're like, you immediately want to push up your glass and go, well, actually, that is not a line from the original, you know, Robert E. Howard and blah, 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 blah. And that is true. And the Conan of the Howard stories is a much different character from that movie.
Very much.
But clearly, there are things from that movie, the best damn soundtrack of all time, but also iconic lines and entertainment and engagement that created an icon that changed pop culture and transformed that character from being merely popular to like everyone knows who Conan is.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can't deny the power of that, just like you can't deny what Christopher Reeve as Superman or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so you have to embrace. That isn't to say I want to write the Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan, and I can be very critical of the changes in John Milius's story from the source material while still recognizing the entertainment quality of it.
Yes.
And I had a weird breakthrough when I came back around on the Titan stuff. So many more old school fans who came to Conan from the movies are reading the book now than were reading it previously at Marvel. They've really come around. The old school fans have heard this is the stuff. This feels like the old school stuff. And so there's a whole generation of fans who have not been in the comic book store for years. They've not had a pull list for over a decade. And their pull is Conan right now. And they are deeply invested in that movie. And I realize I came around like 180 degrees and I said, oh, actually, I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with embracing all that. When someone comes to my table and they say, so you're going to answer the Riddle of Steel? I'm like, boy, are we. Keep reading. Like, what is best in life? Working on this fucking book. Like, that's what, like, I can quote it line and verse at you because I embrace all of it in that broader sense of, yes, that is part of the icon of Conan. And if you come to it from the movies, I don't care. If you come to it from the Saturday morning cartoon or the Conan Exiles video game or the Conan board game, I don't care how you come to it as long as you come to it. And you come to the Church of Crom and we're going to deliver the goods and make it awesome. You know what I mean? That's way more important to me than, you know, some purity test. Well, if you can't quote me the best line of God in the Bowl, you know, and if you don't know which issue of Weird Tales, yeah, you know, had the first appearance and that the first story wasn't Frost Giant's Daughter, but it's Phoenix on the Sword. Like, I don't want to run you through the gauntlet. Conan is the easiest book to read. You don't require any superhero continuity. You don't need to know the character's history. You don't need to know anything. The reason why the book sold like hell, like just hell on fire in the 70s was because everyone picked up the book, because on a month-to-month basis, you knew it was going to be badass.
Yeah.
And you knew Savage Sword was going to be badass with some of the best art in the industry. What is Conan all about? There's this incredible world full of fantasy and mystery called the Hyborian Age. This guy called Conan's got a wanderlust, and he's a survivor. So when he's young, he's like an impetuous troublemaker. When he's old, he's the leader of men, and then he becomes a king by his own hand. You don't even need to know that.
Nope.
This guy shows up places and shit's going to go down. Conan, read the book. It's going to be awesome. Right? Like, that's it. That's all you need. It's easier than Gotham, and it's easier than the Avengers, and it's easier than anything. It is, this guy is a force of change, and where he shows up, shit's going down, and it's going to be well worth your cover price, and let's go. You know, like, and so embrace the movie, embrace the video game, embrace all the stuff. When I tell people I work on Conan the Barbarian, it doesn't matter if they're 20 years old or they're 60 years old, their eyebrow perk up and they go, I know what that is. What's that like? And I'm like, it's awesome. It's my favorite thing in the universe. I love it.
I've got a Friday night group, Friday night tabletop group. We play virtually because we're at various points in the country.
Sure.
And one of them is a comic reader, not quite as voracious as I would be, and I messaged our group earlier today and went, guys, interviewing the dude that writes the Conan the Barbarian book, and they all come back going, what class?
That's awesome.
So they're all those that didn't know there was a Conan the Barbarian comic are going, all right, can I get one of those? One of those ones that has loads of comics in it. Can I get one of those trade paperbacks?
Very soon, actually.
Yeah.
Trade paperbacks arriving this month. Yeah, it is a really cool feeling. Like I said, because that character's got such an iconic status, when you tell people, you know, like, oh, what do? I write comic books. I'm like, oh, what's that like? And, oh, it's really cool. What do you write? Would I know it? Well, Conan the Barbarian. Whoa. And some mixture of, you know, oh, I didn't know there were comics, or, oh, they still publish those, or, holy crap, that's amazing. You know, and then you show them the book and it sells itself. Like, yeah, the art teams we've got, Doug Braithwaite's one of the best artists in the industry. Rob Del Torre is one of the best artists in the industry. They, you know, live and breathe this stuff. The colors are beautiful. The letters are beautiful. Everyone's busting their ass on it. It's a real, once you get it in people's hands, it's a pretty easy sell once you flip that thing open. And so in that sense, it feels very cool to be on this, to be a part of this very, very cool team. And obviously I've got these plans and I'm building these stories, but without that art, we would be nowhere, you know, that's for sure.
I mean, aside from all those things, aside from the art and everything else, your passion sells it, Jim.
Thanks, man.
Passion with which you talk about it. And you mentioned these stories, you know, and the plans that you have. I gotta say, whenever I read the was it issue five or issue six,
mm-hmm.
whenever they in the second arc, whenever they stole the thing they were there to steal, and we realized the significance of what it was, I was like, yes, we got some continuity,
right? Well, this is the thing, is that I'm sure if this was the 80s, you would have a long string of kind of one and two off self-contained stories before we stitched those two arcs together. But you got to keep in mind, I shouldn't have even gotten this relaunch.
Yeah.
So to me, it was like, we got 12 issues. We got to make year one, for lack of a better term, the craziest, biggest, most explosive we can, because we got to remind people why this book was a heavy hitter, why this character is so great, and that if you miss a month, you're going to kick yourself, because it's everyone's going to be a banger. And so we just went in with this air of like, assume there's only 12 and sprint like there's 12. And if the finish line's not there, just keep running, man. Just like keep running. And so the fourth arc that's going to start with issue 13 feels like the first time we take a breath. And the reason why we do it the way we do is because 13 is, first of all, we end the first year with the most crazy crap. I can't even, just wait. It's going to be awesome.
We're there for it.
We need to redial and kind of contrast it. We need to sort of like slow down, get back to these very kind of survival kind of roots of Conan. And it's like a man on the land, like in a bad situation, no big crazy epic magic, no ludicrous artifacts, just like Conan the Survivor kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're going to have big wild magic and ludicrous over the top threats, 13's going to have this real nice, whoo, okay, now what? Well, now we're going to start that slow boil back up again, like real down to earth Conan in the land, and let's kind of get to it. And then we can start to slowly stagger up again, because you can't maintain that, you know, high end
intensity. Yeah.
Yeah. And you shouldn't, because it becomes too much. If you try and keep the volume at 10 the whole way, it just becomes loud. It doesn't become powerful, right? So it's not to say that 13 is a bad story. It's just a very different vibe. Like, we're just sort of like, all right, let's kind of get to this core of the character and this concept of, I don't want to spoil it.
No, don't, please don't.
Some really cool psychology of what makes Conan tick. And when I pitched this story, the response I got from Heroic and the editorial team was just like, oh, I don't know that we've ever seen a Conan story quite like this. That'll be a nice breath of fresh air. You know what I mean? And it was a challenge for me to kind of go, okay, 1 to 12, we really, I think, proved our bona fides. And now we've, hopefully by that point, we've got the audience that is sticking with us because they know it's quality. And so we can kind of like, check this out. Let's sort of, you know, not experimental. It's still the core ingredients of what makes Conan tick, but we can kind of push out into other corridors with it. Yeah.
And then, of course, after issue 13, you relaunch with a brand new number one.
No. It's funny. People were saying to me, like, how many do you want to do? And, you know, the pithy answer is like, well, they're going to peel it from my cold, dead fingers. So I don't know, you know, but I don't know. It's like, I don't, there's a stupid answer, which is, so the reprint editor who's dealing with all the omnibuses and stuff, we were talking, and they've got everything. They've got all the reprint rights for all the Marvel stuff, all the Dark Horse stuff. And so they've got an archive that they're reorganizing and whatever. And obviously Roy Thomas is done more than anyone else, like 300 plus issues of Conan between the monthly book and the annuals and the miniseries and the specials and Savage Sword and special anniversary stuff and all this. But then the number two most Conan writer is a guy named Michael Fleischer, who did them in the sort of mid to late 80s, I think into the early 90s. And then after that is like Tim Truman did a pile at Dark Horse. I think he's got maybe 50 odd issues of Conan that he did total. Mm-hmm. Well, if you add up the Dark Horse stuff I did, the Marvel stuff I did, that was already, I want to say, 23 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm on the monthly book, plus I'm doing the new Savage Sword. Almost every month I'm going to have something in there. Well, now I kind of want that number two spot. Like I kind of want, and I don't want to beat, no offense to Tim Truman or Michael Fleischer, but I don't want to beat them by like one comic. Like I got to have some distance. I don't want them to catch me. So I got to push out and do a bunch, just for that stupid, prize. I don't know. Plus, I just have a whole pile of ideas. Every time I start to dig deeper into the character, or I start to think about ideas, they just naturally spawn more, you know? Oh, I've never seen the character do this kind of a thing. Or I'll read some old Conan story and they go, that's cool. But you know what they didn't do with that is they could have gone crazier. They could have gone bigger. What if we put it in a different environment? What if we kind of move these elements around? And trying not to fall into the hoary stereotypes of just like, wizard in a tower, you know, the girl. Like, yes, those are elements of a Conan story, but we can shock you and surprise you still. We can still, just like any other iconic character, the reason why they work is because the foundation is strong and we can keep building on top of it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Funny to say it about a 90-year-old character, but you know, as long as it stays as fresh and as the quality stays at the level it's at, you do as many as you want.
Well, look, thank you. I really appreciate that. This is the thing, right? There's a legacy there that speaks to the character has something very foundational in terms of what it says about us, as survivors, as the wanderlust kind of wanderers, as characters struggling to find themselves and then to grab hold of their fate and make themselves into something. Like, that is very intrinsic to the Robert E. Howard, the Texan kind of American spirit that speaks to that character. And also this idea of the self-made man and the character that stands up, like wherever Conan goes, you know, he breaks systems, he destroys religions, he crushes evil, he brings down governments. You know what I mean? Like, at the heart of Robert E. Howard's storytelling is the idea of civilization versus savagery, and that the civilized world is a veneer of politeness that hides the most depraved and disgusting aspects of ourselves, that we create these kingdoms that uphold systems that justify terrible behavior of human beings. And the barbarians, the Sumerians, don't lie. They would never stab you in the back. They tell you to your face, if you cross this line, I'll destroy you. So who do you trust? Do you trust the barbarian, or do you trust, you know? The governor, the government, the
yes,
right? Yep. Like, that's what's so cool about that character. And then the dichotomy of that character becoming a king and having to like strain and struggle against that. You are the system now, right?
Yep.
Just like how every rebellious punk suddenly becomes, you know, part of the system.
Yeah, a conservative.
Every right? And it's like, what are you now? Do you still have that fire burning in you? Are you a rebel, or are you just a quiet, sad old man? Right? And what defines you? And that's an interesting bit of storytelling there too. The character has more depth than people realize. He's smarter than people assume. Especially if you read the original stories.
Yep.
He has way more guile. He has more intensity. He is a fantastic judge of others, and he understands what makes them tick, which is why he becomes a good leader. And he is honor bound, not necessarily early in his career. Early in his career, he's very much like, take the money, do anything to survive. Later on, he figures out these broader structural qualities of humanity. And he's still not at peace with it. You know, that's what makes him so interesting. And I'm super excited to explore all these different elements in different stories, you know?
Well, the biggest compliment we can give you for the series is that you're talking about them reorganizing everything from the start and printing the omnibuses and stuff like that. And Keith and I have already put ourselves down for both the original Conan and the original Savage Sword, just because of how much we're enjoying the current stuff and how much we're
thanks, man. Those original Savage Swords, if you haven't read them, almost every issue in that original run, like the first year, the first 2 years in particular, are just unbelievable quality. The stories that adapt the classic Howard stories, the other Robert E. Howard characters that they move along through that series, a lot of artists who kind of found their voice in the black and whites or combinations of, like John Buscema and Alfredo Alcala, their stories are so beautiful. The line work is so stunning. Mm. It is inspiring, you know, because they can't even rest on their laurels with colors. It's just all there in the core storytelling and the black and whites. And, you know, this new Savage Sword magazine that's launching at the end of this month, being a part of that feels like being part of an even bigger kind of foundational legacy, you know?
Yeah.
I've got a Joe Jusco came back to do a new cover for the issue one, and he hadn't done a Conan piece in over 20 years. And we got to contact him, and he excitedly said he would do the cover for issue one. And I helped art direct him on the thing. And I wrote a prose short story that goes with the artwork from that cover. So now I'm daring to write a Robert E. Howard style short story, like something from Weird Tales. Well, that's just stupid. That's impossible. What the hell's going on? And talking to one of my favorite cover artists of that era and meeting him at New York Comic Con, and he came over. I was going to go visit him, and my booth was so busy, I didn't get a chance to go up and see him. And he came down to my table and we chatted, and I couldn't tell anyone why we were hanging out. They were just like, "Oh, Joe Jusco." And I was like, "Yeah, I can't say we're playing the legend yet." Don't think. So I'm just like, "It was a joy to meet the legend, Joe Jusco." And not being like, "Wow, yeah, man, I'm super pumped." You know, like, it was just crazy. It's such an exciting and cool time. It's such a fun air. The Free Comic Book Day issue of Conan this year is just going to knock people out. There's a new artist on board called Jonath Scharf, and I love his artwork so much. And that guy is on overdrive right now. I cannot wait for you to see this issue. It's just nuts. And he's drawing an event miniseries that we're doing this fall. And so I'm doing the monthly book, I'm doing Stories for Savage Sword, and I'm doing this event book that we're going to be releasing in the fall called Battle of the Blackstone. And it's like,
ooh,
it's absolutely nuts. So I'm in my happy place, all Hyborian all the time. It's really, really good.
Well, you're no longer just, your brand is no longer just the Swords and Sorcery Fantasy guy. You're the Swords and Sorcery Fantasy
yeah,
guy.
I don't want to, for now, that is very much the case. And I never want to take it for granted, you know, which feels very cool. Every so often I'll see a comment or someone will send me a thing. I'll lurk on things like there's a Reddit comic books, you know, and every so often a Conan thing will come up, or I'll thank people for reading or whatever. And sometimes I don't respond because you don't know how to respond to something. I don't want to make anyone feel weird. But like I see a comment where someone literally says, "Well, if Zub's writing it, I've already pre-ordered." And you're just like, oh, geez, yeah. You know, like that. Well, that's great. You know, that's very cool or whatever. Or now the Conan fandom is like, they're all in. They're all in to the point where they're like buying up the Marvel trades from my previous run. And they're like, "Why didn't this get its due?" And you're like, well, that's a good sign, you know, yeah. Like, because I'm proud of those stories too. I'm proud of all the stuff that we've been able to do. But now it feels like we got this wind at our backs. And it's a pretty cool time. And however long it lasts, I just want to make sure that when it's all said and done, and hopefully no time soon, that I can look back and go, yeah, at every moment we put our all into it. And that's why it was what it was, you know?
Well, I think that is probably the perfect note to end on. I mean, you've got, thanks, as you say, you've got Savage Sword of Conan coming out at the end of this month, February 28th. You've got... the first volume, Bound in Blackstone, due out February 14th. Perfect Valentine's Day present, if you will, guys. You've obviously been ridiculously, you know, generous with your time. It's been a great chat. Thanks, I just have to finish off with one last thing. Did you write the previews blurb for the Conan trade paperback?
Which one? The one that was in the catalog, or the one that's on the back of the cover?
So on Previews World, when you search Conan the Barbarian trade paperback volume 1 Titan Comics, it says it is written by Guillermo Zubiaga.
What? Well, that's... But amazing.
I will forward you the link through Twitter just so you can have a good laugh. But it still says Zub on the front cover, but you've good. Been given a honorary Spanish name, it would appear, to
well, that's amazing.
To release
I'm
the book with.
I'm super excited about that. That is so awesome. Oh, previews. Never change.
Well, as I say, Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure. Keep on pumping out the Lord's work with Conan. We're digging everything that you're throwing our way, and there's new people coming onto it all the time. So many congratulations on the work and seeing the passion come through so much.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Thanks, you. Man. You've been...
If anyone wants to see other stuff I'm doing, just go to jimsup.com. So I've got a newsletter I put out called the Zubstack, talking about my work and what's going on there, a behind-the-scenes process, sometimes even recipes and things that I'm cooking. I've got a bunch of tutorials on my website about how comics are made, and I have a Patreon archive of over 300 scripts that I've written from over the years if people want to see what goes on behind the scenes. And you can find me on all the social medias through that website, and... let me know that you're reading the book, and it means a lot. So thank you.
And thank you so much for your time. You've been very, very generous, and the passion is something else. It's been fabulous to talk
to you.
Thanks,
man.
And
very
great,
cool.
Great to chat to a fellow role-playing geek as well.
That's right. I hope we get a chance to game it up or tip a few pints in person. That would be wonderful.
Perfect. Thanks again, Jim.
Sweet. Take care now.
Good night.
So, I've been Alan Taylor, and this has been Keith Miller.
You can find Alan in-store at Coffee and Heroes most days, and on Twitter, where Alan is Coffee and Heroes 1, and I'm AscaniSon00. Coffee and Heroes is a local comic book store, coffee shop, and community hub in Northern Ireland, based at Smithfield Market in the centre of Belfast.
You can also find Coffee and Heroes on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at coffeeandheroes@hotmail.com. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel as well.
Coffee and Heroes podcast is available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and through all good podcast platforms. Please like and subscribe and leave a review so more people can find us.
And until next time, happy reading, and hope to see you in store soon.